first thing right out of the gate, we heard JOK will not play this week. We all saw his head basically kind of get whiplash when he got hurt, and it was a scary moment. And we're just glad he said he's at home today, so that's good. Give him some time, relax, chill out, get feel better. And then when he's ready to come back, come back. I'm just glad to even hear that, because initially when we saw that on the field, it was like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah,
and the way the players were huddling around. And then he gave it a thumbs up on his way out the door, too, when they were taking him off. So that was good, and I think the players kind of knew that by the end of the game, because I think they were worried. And then when they got back to the locker room at the end of the game, they were like, okay, it sounds like he's going to be all right. So he's at home. That's good news. But he will not play this week. I'm just trying to look over some of the other things that
check he had back said. On Denzel Ward.
Yeah, they call him day to day, and normally he would say he's in concussion protocol. So I thought that was interesting. He said he's day to day. I don't. When most guys are in concussion protocol, coaches will say. I know maybe I'm just semantics there or not.
I would assume he's in concussion protocol, and we'll see if he can get out of it and what he decides to do.
He did say that Jameis Winston is the starter for the rest of the season. You know, as long as everything goes okay, it's his job now, right?
Well, that's good. Let's see it. You know, Andy, if the guy can play like he played last week, like he played at times in Tampa, even like he played at times in New Orleans, I think that it puts the Browns in a very interesting, difficult, challenging situation. But a better situation than they're in before he played last week.
He also brought up, I thought there was some good line of questioning there about the trade deadline. I thought when he talked about Andrew Berry, other than the fact that we found out that his wife and Andrew Berry's wife were at lunch while we were talking, was that Andrew Berry keeps him. I thought this was a really interesting line. He goes, he keeps me in the loop, but not in the weeds when it comes to what's coming up for the trade deadline. I thought that was interesting, meaning that, hey, we're going to let you know what's going on. This is what maybe if you think we need to do this, or maybe if you feel like we could improve, or I might throw a couple names at you, you tell me who might be able to fit our scheme better. I don't know. I kind of got deeper on that, but I like the fact that, I mean, I don't think Kevin Stefanski needs to be in the weeds on the trade deadline. You know, they walk up to Kevin and say, so-and-so's traded. Kevin's got to say, I got to go with the players they give me, right? I mean, that's right. The way it is in every sport.
Yeah, there's no question.
So, but I'm sure there are plenty of situations where the head coach or the manager isn't in the loop, and that they find out when the team finds out when things are going to happen. So, but he said he's not in the weeds with him on day-to-day stuff. So I think that's actually the perfect answer for any coach manager, right?
I would agree.
I don't know what else you got.
Not Kevin's job, but he needs to be informed.
Yeah, exactly. And then I had Denzel's day to day. That was the other thing I wrote down from the press conference today. He also said this is a big week of prep. So
there's a stunner. I'd love to hear a coach say, "Yeah, we're not taking this one very seriously."
You know, most people want to say it's a trap game.
Not a big deal.
Kind of say it's a game.
Chargers. Best thing about them is those uniforms.
You know, I'm kind of worried about the Dolphins game in late December. Just once,
we're really looking ahead to Pittsburgh.
Did you get anything else?
Any attention here?
Did you get anything else out of that?
I'm the anti-Menigan. I enjoy listening to Kevin.
I do. I like hearing it.
I just hear what he has to say.
Sometimes we get stuff. Sometimes we don't. I mean, to say JOK wasn't going to play right away, I thought was interesting.
Good idea.
I missed it. Jameis Winston at the top of the hour was named the AFC Offensive Player of the Week. How about that?
There you go. Do you think he can become a guy? And it's been done before. You know, there are guys that take a while to get their opportunity, and then when they get their opportunity, they perform well and they become something. You mentioned Kurt Warner before. That was Kurt. You know, Kurt never had an opportunity, and then he became the starter when Trent Green went down with the Rams, and he became really good. It's a smaller group, I think, of guys who had the opportunity and went somewhere and then it didn't work and they were kind of considered a bust and then they went somewhere else and did something. And I maybe bust isn't the right word, but you know, like Sam Darnold, he was the starter with the Jets and then boy, he had to go and, you know, pay some dues. You could say Baker, even though I think Baker had more success here than Darnold had in New York. Rich Gannon did that and came back and was the MVP. Jim Plunkett, if you want to go way back, was the number one pick of the Patriots, kind of washed out and then became a big-time guy with the Raiders. I wonder if Jameis can become that kind of a guy.
All right, so you've been saying something for weeks, and I want to react to that. So you, especially when it comes to Jameis Winston, let's add to the fun and bring in another voice of Cleveland. You know him, you love him for the national stuff he does, though. A little bit more, I think. How about he was in England the other day? Man, this guy's all
over
the place.
Dude gets around.
He is Chris Rose, and we love him. He's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hello, Christopher. How are you?
Chris?
Good. How is my guy, John Ireland? He's always good.
John was outstanding.
Yeah, he does a really good job for them.
You know, he and Jeff are very, very close. They're tight.
Did not know that.
Yeah, Jeff, give him the background. You guys worked in the same market.
I worked at the NBC. He worked at the ABC in Beaumont, Texas.
Oh, I love that.
How about that?
When your paths cross about 90 years later. That's awesome.
Took a trip to Vegas together. Lost money.
Oh, my God.
Lost money.
I don't know if we need to hear the rest of the story on this one.
Yeah.
Couple things, Chris. I do want to get to the Browns in a second, but I was, you know, as always, I follow you on Instagram, and you caught my eye yesterday when you were like, oh, man, the Yankees have really disappointed us in the World Series. But then last night, they came back. They made you eat your words a little bit last night. What do you think?
Yeah, it was nice to actually get some semblance of a series, and we'll see if they make it more interesting. I know that Cleveland fans aren't very interested in hearing that aspect of it, but once we were eliminated, I was kind of fascinated by a matchup we hadn't seen in more than four decades. And although some of the games were close, it just felt like there was a serious lack of energy from New York ever since Freddie Freeman hit the walk-off grand slam in game one. Obviously, things went a little bit different last night. Dodgers using their B-list bullpen for the most part. And we'll see what happens tonight. Could be fascinating.
Chris,
as long as those two jerks aren't allowed back in the stadium.
How about that, man? I thought he was going to steal his glove at one point when he watched the replay. I'm like, what's this guy doing?
Yeah, I think the most disturbing part of it all is that according to one ESPN Jesse Rogers report, those two guys said they were told by the Yankees brass that they could come back for tonight. Like, there's no way in the world those guys should be allowed anywhere near there. And one of them is a season ticket holder. I'd revoke their season tickets. I wouldn't want anything to do with them. They're not. I can't believe I'm giving them any more pub than need be. But here's the way it would play out. They'd be back in their seats tonight. Fox would show them 18 times. Mm-hmm. They'd end up getting a podcast of their own. And all of a sudden, we'd twist this around where somehow they're becoming famous for being jerks.
So what?
Gee, never happened before.
Dan and I had a conversation before I went back and watched the replay of it again today. Like, what is a fan's right there? Like, because they went way over the line. They were like, take the ball out of the glove. Well, I mean, like, that's ridiculous. But I do think that if you're a fan and it's the opposite team, and although this would be to steal a home run, not a foul. Well, no, even on a foul ball because it's still an out. That you, as a fan, maybe you should yell and scream or try to distract them from catching the ball because you're trying to help your team. But those guys cross the line.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. Don't rip a ball out of somebody's glove like that. That's number one. Number two is do not grab a body part of somebody that's playing in a game.
Well played.
I love the quotes that these guys have. They're like, we're the defenders of the wall. I was like, oh, really? Like, you're on the Yankees payroll and enrolled in their 401k? That's awesome. Maybe other teams should look into hiring fans, you know, to be the protectors of the wall. Like, you guys, and one of you idiots is wearing sunglasses at night. Like, don't sleep on that part.
That's great. It's the crapshoot of baseball. The middle of that Yankee lineup was so terrific against the Guardians, and it's been so pedestrian, I guess, against the Dodgers. It's one of the things I love about the game. We know where this series stands right now. Do you think the Dodgers are a significantly better team than the Yankees, or do you think they're just comparable and they've won three or four?
Oh, I do think they're better. They're a better team, and they're a better organization. I mean, the Dodgers are really doing this without a bunch of guys that would be helping them. and their stars are more consistent, it feels like. I mean, obviously, I don't know what's going on with Aaron Judge. I mean, this isn't a 2024 thing. This is a real, like, Barry Bonds before 2002 playoff sort of struggle for him. He still, you know, listen, they could rip off four in a row, be the first team in the World Series era to ever come back from a 3-0 deficit, and, you know, maybe things can change. But that's, I think, rather alarming for a lot of fans out there. But I do just think, I think the Dodgers are a better organization than the Yankees. I'm not saying the Yankees are a bad organization. I just think that they got an incredibly easy run. I should say, I'm not going to say easy. I'm going to say the easiest run they've had to a World Series since 2009. What I mean by that is, if you were to line up the 15 years of teams they had to face in order to try and get to the World Series, this was the easiest. Some year has to be the hardest. Some year has to be the easiest. If you were to have combined the lineups of the Guardians and the Royals, the two teams that the Yankees beat, take the best players out of those teams, it's still not as good as the Dodgers. That's not being mean. That's just, those are facts. And we'll see.
All right, let's switch gears. Let's go Browns. Are you, not that you would ever leave the bandwagon, but do you, are you a little bit more excited about the Browns after what we witnessed on Sunday moving forward? I know the odds are slim of them seeing the postseason, but I got to tell you, it felt really good to walk out of that stadium on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, guys, it looked like an offense. You know, that was the most reassuring thing here, is that they looked like a professional operation. There's nothing more difficult to watch in sports than when your offense stinks. Like, it is hard. In order to do my prep for the Patriots-Jags, I had to watch every New England game. That was brutal.
Sorry about that.
Until Drake May got in there. And then they started to look like a real offense. I love Jacoby Brissett. There just aren't enough playmakers up there to make him look like a solid starting quarterback. He did here when he started the first 11 games in 2022. He was throwing the ball downfield, all sorts of stuff. That didn't happen in New England for the first five games, and it was a mess here. Now, if we want to talk about why that is, okay.
Why?
I think we all know why.
Yeah. Tell me this. What's your gut tell you who's the starting quarterback of this team next year? Is it somebody?
I don't know.
Well, is he even on this roster?
So here's what I can answer. Jameis has given us reason to be excited, okay? And I get that.
Amen.
But it's like when you've been eating fast food every day for a year. And then all of a sudden, you go to like a 3-star restaurant, maybe 4. And you're like, nice. Oh my God, this food is incredible.
Wait, is the baked potato with a meal or is it a la carte? That's the difference.
That all depends.
Yeah.
So Jameis has always been a fun guy to watch when he's not on your team, because he'll keep his team in the game and the other team in the game. Like, he is the greatest coin flip quarterback in the history of the sport. What guy hits 30-30 in the NFL touchdown to interception ratio world? It just does not happen. It's incredible that he was able to do that.
With 5,000 yards.
It's one of the greatest sports feats in history.
Yeah.
And he could have been picked off 4 times on Sunday. Like, that's part of the deal. Now, some people will say, well, Lamar could have been picked off 4 times. I get it. Yeah, Denzel had his hands on one. MJ had his hands on one. Yes, it definitely could have happened. But let's be serious here. We're not going to compare what Lamar Jackson brings to the table compared to what Jameis Winston does. Is he a capable starter? Yes, I think he's a capable starter. Is he the guy that can win you a Super Bowl? I don't think so. Then there's no shot at that. I don't think there's a lot of guys that can. But I really, you know, and people say, well, Nick Foles did it. I get it. That was like worlds coming together that year. I just don't, and let's remember, the Eagles didn't bank on him being the starter. Carson Wentz blew out his knee late in the season. And that's why Nick Foles ended up being the guy. It just... he's given us a lot of hope because based on what we had to sit through the first 7 weeks or 6 weeks of the year.
Sure.
And that is beneficial to us as fans. But if we're trying to look big picture, and we'll deal with it in the offseason, I don't know if that's the route you want to go necessarily.
Okay, Chris, I want to go back to something that you had said earlier and just talk about London for a second, because you were just there and you had, I mean, you had 2-1-5 teams at the time too. How was it? And in particular, how long did it take you to get there from Los Angeles as we look about, you know, the future and trying to have more, obviously having more games there, especially if we had 18, just, you know, what would make it easier and where are we headed with this thing? What do you think?
All right, you got to repeat the back half of that question. I kind of zoned out for a second.
That's okay, me too, because it was too long, and I was trying to figure out where I was going with it. But I know exactly where I'm going. What when we talk about the NFL in London or anywhere in Europe, like, how can they make it easy on the teams and make it work? Because Jeff and I talk about this a lot. And then the other question I had, I know that it was Jacksonville, New England, but you had to come from L.A. How long did it take you to get there?
Well, I could just tell you, my wife and I went together to London. We arrived on, we flew Wednesday afternoon, so we left here at 4 o'clock. You just can't, you know, there's really odd times for flying. So when you leave at 4 o'clock and it's a 9.5-hour flight, it's hard to kind of fall asleep. We did not sleep on the plane. We were not right until Monday, till after the game.
Wow.
Like, we couldn't. Now, part of that, I got to be honest with you, part of it was I was watching Guardians games at 3:30 in the morning. Like, I, you know, what was I supposed to do? Try and sleep while my team's fighting for a spot in the World Series? That wasn't happening. So, but
if it makes you feel better, I did the same thing for opening day, and I was sitting in Italy. So I was up in the middle of the night doing the same thing and the eclipse. So you're not alone, my friend. You're not alone.
Yeah. So I don't understand how the players are able to do it when they, like, the Patriots got there on Friday morning for a Sunday game. You know, and we talked to him on Saturday. We talked to a handful of the players. They said, yeah, they're a little tired, but it wasn't bad for them. Like, they were able to get through it. I guess that's what happens when you're 30 years younger than an out-of-shape dad bod guy. But, like, as far as big picture, will it work? Will there ever be – are you asking me, will there ever be a full-time team there?
Yeah, I mean, how's it – basically.
I think there's a ton – of logistical stuff that has to happen in order for that to, because just think about it. Like, if you got a team in London, they would have to come over here and play like 3 straight weeks. Right?
Right.
And then when you're sending teams over there a week at a time, if you're sending the Rams over there to go play the London whatevers, the London Big Bens, you're asking the Rams to do what I just did, and I just told you that my body wasn't right until like 4 or 5 days later. So that's a huge advantage for the team that lives there full-time. Let's not even get into the, well, how do we get free agents there? What does the salary cap look like for that team? Is it really fair to draft kids over to a foreign country that is, you know, 5 or 8 hours away from what they're used to living in? Like, there's a lot of things that would need to be answered.
Faster planes. That's all we need.
Yeah.
That'll make it work. Yeah. Chris, as always, you know we love talking to you. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, boys. Always enjoyable.
We love it. Thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you soon. Chris Rose on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. As we continue to talk more about the Browns and your chance to cruise with the Browns as well. Played for the Browns for 3 years at linebacker. Pride of Wisconsin. Probably the second most famous. 4 years, sorry. For 4 years for the Browns, and then probably the second most famous Brown from Wisconsin, right? Would you say that? Or you could be you're number one right now, I'll tell you that. Joe Schobert's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. That Joe Thomas, he just keeps getting in the way, doesn't he?
It's guys named Joe from Wisconsin. They like him.
Yeah, I was going to say, second most famous Joe from Wisconsin. I'll take that.
Fair enough. We'll put you in the Hall of Fame. We'll put the annex in the Hall of Fame in Canton. Does that work?
Yeah, I just need a little asterisk. That's all I need.
That sounds good. Hey, Joe, first of all, what are you up to? How's life treating you?
Good. Me and my wife and family live out in Colorado now, and just life's treating us well. great place to be to get outdoors, and we just I enjoyed watching football this year, so it's been good.
How'd you pick Colorado?
We like the mountains, like to ski and hike and fly fish and do all that kind of stuff, so seemed like a good place to be.
Nice. That's outstanding. You played 4 years for the Browns, and you were here mainly during the Hugh Jackson time when you were with Freddie Kitchens. How difficult was it to be on a team that, and even though you got a pretty good run with you, that had been historically in transition?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first 2 years I was there were the lean years. So we didn't get a lot of success for the amount of work we put in, and just being in a constant state of transition, even though Hugh was the head coach, we did have multiple defensive coordinators and multiple position coaches. So you never really got to like feel like your feet were set in the ground. And like when I went other places later in my career, different environments, some environments were very similar to that, always in transition, and some were much more established. And you just feel like the comfortability in the building and people knowing what their role is and what they're supposed to be expected to do every week is just different. And when you're in transition all the time, you never really get that feeling.
Joe, as you watch the game right now too, especially, yeah, Pro Bowl, outstanding in college as well. As you watch the linebacker position kind of emerge and evolve into different things, what are your thoughts on the state of the position right now and the impact it has on the game? Because we're watching JOK right now, and he'll be out this week, but he's playing some great linebacker right now for the Browns.
Yeah, I mean, my main thought is I'm glad I'm not playing anymore. it's become more hybrid safety linebackers, where you get like JOK, like just a phenomenal athlete, not necessarily a big guy. He can hit, obviously, he's very physical, but he's not what you'd describe as a thumper, not like a Ray Lewis kind of guy.
Right.
And it feels like linebackers, especially the Will linebackers in a 4-3, or like sometimes the Mike linebackers in like the Tampa 2 schemes, are much more like strong safety type bodies. Where like if you took even from 10 years ago, Cam Chancellor, a strong safety, he's bigger than probably 80% of the league's linebackers this day and age. So it's transitioned to be much more defensive against the pass, and I think the defenses have caught up and passed the offenses in that, in the majority of things, because you just see how great quarterbacks and good offenses are struggling to score points this year just because the defenses are so well-equipped to play against the pass.
Joe, with that thought in mind, you know, decades ago, in 3-4, whatever it was, running backs were like the star players, and middle linebackers were the stars on the defense. And now it seems like teams think they can get anybody to play both of those spots. Is that because of the emphasis? And first of all, do you agree? And second of all, the emphasis on the passing game, might bet that be the reason why?
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that statement. It seems like there's a much more of a plug-and-play philosophy in terms of running backs and linebackers in the NFL this day and age, where like the schematics, it seems like the stars of the teams are now the edge rushers and then the safeties, the guys who make plays in the passing game, who can really disrupt games from that aspect, because there's not teams lining up in pro formations trying to run the ball downhill except for the Ravens. But even they have a very unique scheme for running the ball. It's not traditional pro formations. So there's just not that emphasis on those positions. Like, you obviously still have the marquee players like the Fred Warners and stuff at the linebacker position, but it very much seems like a lot of linebacker spots are filled in with the cheap rookie guys who have fresh legs, who can run around and just be kind of plug-and-play guys this day and age, as opposed to what it used to be.
Hey, Joe, when you reflect back on your days with the Browns, like, what were some of the favorite things you liked about Cleveland and playing for the Browns?
Yeah, I mean, I loved, especially when Greg Williams and that defensive scheme came in, I loved playing for Greg and just the mentality that we had on defense. And, I mean, we weren't successful my first 2 years, so, like, the us-against-the-world mentality was great. And when we came, like, in year three, when we went 7-8-1, it felt like we were winning the Super Bowl just because we were finally seeing some success on the field. We were fighting for a playoff spot. Like, we still had that mentality, and Greg put that mantra in there. And then just being in a city for 4 years in a row, you start to know, like, what you can do. Like, we stayed all year round, so we were there living in Strongsville in the off season, and like we had our things that we like to do, the places we like to go. I go play basketball with a group of guys on Monday night at North Olmsted High School. So it's just like the fun stuff that you kind of get when you are in a place for a while. Those are some of my best memories. And then like me and Carl Nassib and some friends, Seth DeValve, would always go to a place called Samurai Hibachi Bar in Strongsville, and just had great fun times at that spot.
And after all that, I know a guy has to make a living, and I know that's the answer. And after all that, after a year in Jacksonville, you went to the Steelers, Joe. What the hell, man? Come on.
I mean, I got traded, so I had no choice.
So. Yeah.
You could have gone to Colorado then.
Yeah, see, I'm not Joe Hayden. Joe Hayden signed with them, so there.
Yeah,
that's why I'm the second favorite Joe. Joe Hayden's the third favorite Joe. That's what we should say.
Boom.
That's great. How was it being in Pittsburgh after being 4 years with the Browns, and obviously the Browns' biggest rival? I would think after getting over the initial shock that you're now playing for the Steelers, I admire their organization, and I wonder what it was like.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest difference is the culture in the building, because they've been there. Like the coaching staff has been pretty consistent for the last 15 to 20 years, so that everybody in the building knows what they're supposed to do. Like a bunch of the players have been there for 15 and 20 years as well. Like when I was there, it was Ben's last year. Like Cam Hayward, like TJ Watt was there for 7 years at the time. You got long-standing players, so it's just like, the day-to-day football aspect, like schematic aspect of it, was not different at all. In fact, I'd say like in Cleveland, we worked harder during the week than we worked in Pittsburgh. But everybody was comfortable in their role in Pittsburgh and knew what they were doing. And that just like sense of comfortability on Sundays led to like we won a bunch of games in Pittsburgh by 3 points. And like in my past experience with like the Browns and the Jaguars, like those are the games we lost on last second field goals or giving up a 2 minute drive at the end of the game. Where in Pittsburgh, we were on the other side of that coin. And it was honestly just like the comfortability feeling of everybody in the building knowing what their role was every week during the week at any given time, you know?
You talked about Seth DeValve for a second, your buddy, and then Craig Robertson, Christian Kirksey, Josh Cribbs. There's a bunch of guys going on this cruise, this 5-day Caribbean cruise, March 3rd through the 7th coming up. Your thoughts on that and how much fun that'll be? You'll get a chance to. And if anybody wants to hop on board with that too, you can always go to clevelandbrowns.com and /fans, and you can go find the cruise on there if you want to hop on board with these guys. But that sounds like that's going to be a lot of fun and a pretty good reunion for you guys.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to seeing a bunch of the old friends, and who's going to turn down a 5-day cruise in the Bahamas? Being able to see old friends and hang out with a bunch of rabid football fans, it's going to be a blast. I'm really looking forward to it.
It does sound like fun.
I'd hop in a second.
You better be ready to talk football like crazy, though, Joe.
I know. That's what at the end of the year. The good thing is March is like the lull in football season, the off season, so you are ready to actually like speak about it. It's not oversaturated at that point.
If you're going on the cruise, it's meet and greets, it's autograph sessions, it's the alumni hosted group dinners, they're having a beach party, and so all that stuff's available at clevelandbrowns.com if you want to check that out, /fans. I do want to ask you about your Big Ten roots there for a second. Your thoughts on how Luke Fickell's doing? Obviously, he was a favorite son of Ohio when he played at Ohio State. He's probably one of my favorite guys to cover when I was in Columbus, too. Your thought of Wisconsin football right now and the general overall state of having the Big Ten on the other side of you now, where you live in Colorado and seeing all these teams out west that are in the Big Ten now.
Yeah, I think first, like Luke Fickell, I think the Wisconsin program is taking steps in the right direction, but the Wisconsin program right now is very much in flux in terms of since COVID hit, I feel like Wisconsin kind of didn't respond to like the COVID, the ups and downs of everything that followed from 2020 on. And we're still trying to find our footing again back where we were in the 2010s, where we were playing in New Year's Six Bowl games, the Orange Bowls, like competing with Ohio State for Big Ten championships, and just kind of trying to find our identity again. And I think Coach Fickell is doing a good job in terms of building that identity. But like with all change, like things are going to happen. And when you don't produce immediate success on the field, like you see every week in, week out at the NFL, people get fired for like not producing immediate success, even though it is an extremely hard thing to do. there's going to be disgruntled people. But I think once, like, Coach Fickell, this is his second year, like, gets his 4-year cycle of recruiting class, and his recruits start to get, like, juniors and seniors, that's the time to really judge exactly where the program's going. But for now, like, I went back to a game this year when they played Alabama, and in terms of, like, we lost, but it was mostly because of execution. Yeah. In terms of, like, the athletes and the physicality on the field, because I was able to be down on the sideline, it looked like two even teams physically and athletically going at it. They just were able to execute better than us and take advantage of a couple of mistakes that the Badgers had, and then once it snowballed, it got a little out of hand. But in terms of just, like, I was impressed with the, like, physicality and athleticism of the team. So I think once we kind of find our footing under his regime, there's a chance for us to be really, really good. But obviously you have to have time to input your stuff.
Joe, I have 10 seconds. I just wanted to ask you really quick. Jump around is probably one of the best traditions ever, college sports. I think it is.
Oh, definitely. Definitely one of the best traditions. It's like, especially night games, the crowd's going crazy, the building's shaking.
It's awesome.
You're winning. It's great. It's kind of like, I mean, obviously this is Cleveland podcast, but like in Pittsburgh, when the Renegade is going and you're on that team, it's amazing. When you're on the other team, it's demoralizing. But when you're on the other team and you're beating Pittsburgh and they play it, then it's like funny. And so it kind of goes both ways. Like when the other team's doing the jump around, it's a little bit annoying.
I don't know. As an Ohio State guy, it was amazing. Joe, have a great cruise. Thank you so much. We really, really do appreciate your time.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Joe Schobert right there. 5-day Caribbean cruise, March 3rd through the 7th. You want more info, go to clevelandbrowns.com.